Sliding by Sage, read by Nosferatu number 9. They'd left Frobisher's outpost with a sled full of fresh equipment and Deef leading them east. The previous night, they'd spent in a tent next to Frobisher's constables. Night before that, they'd nearly frozen to death tacked to the side of that mountain. Night before that, they'd spent in the open, with a fire, a sleeping bag, and a rock for Ray's pillow. And the night before that, well, they were still trying to catch Muldoon back in Chicago. 5 days before, Ray had never imagined bedding down on top of several feet of snow. Funny what a difference a week could make. The first day passed in a blur of white. Fraser was a warm presence at his back, shouting at the dogs and pointing out things for Ray to look at. From time to time, Fraser's hand landed on Ray's shoulder, and Ray tilted his head back to grin up at him. Seeing Fraser this happy was something else. Ray couldn't blame him a bit for planning to stay. Ray sat in the sled, counting the days of leave he'd earned versus the number of days he'd been Vecchio. He'd had worse gigs, but he'd never been undercover for more than 9 months at a time before, and 2 years without his own name, even if he was still a cop, was hard to come back from. On the phone, Welsh had laid out the paid leave, the vacation, the sick days, and given him a grand total. It was a lot of days. Neither of them mentioned the unpaid administrative leave he could request later, if it came to that. Ray knew Welsh could push it through for him. He just didn't know if he'd need it. It was still early, he thought, when Fraser chose a place for them to camp and began to cut out a big square in the snow. Ray stood watching as Fraser laid out the ground sheet in the tent, getting the poles up in all of 3 seconds. Then, after it was all anchored, Fraser started in with the mats and bread rolls. They hadn't been kitted out for an Arctic expedition when Fraser threw him out of the plane, but now they had tarps, thick sleeping pads, fancy sleeping bags, and more pairs of socks than Ray knew what to do with. After they ate, when they crawled into the tent with their 6 hot water bottles, for their boots and for themselves, Fraser explained, Ray was so exhausted that he fell asleep right away. He woke up an hour later, shivering so hard it hurt, and found that Fraser wasn't even there. Ray could hear him crunching around outside, though, and it sounded like he was checking on the dogs. When Fraser came in a few minutes later, a horrified look passed over his face. Then he was leaning low over Ray's body, saying, "Ray, Ray, listen to me. You'll be much warmer if you take your insulating layers off." "That doesn't make any sense, Fraser," he said through chattering teeth. "Less clothes do not make you less cold." "Ray, I assure you." Ray glared, but then Fraser pulled his gloves off to put his bare hands on Ray's cold face, and he was warm. So much warmth against his ears and cheeks and forehead, it felt like it wasn't anything he could come up with words for. It was so warm it hurt. His ears were burning from the touch of Fraser's hands. And then Fraser was hugging him tight and rubbing his back hard through the fleece. And it was better. So much better. "Come on," Fraser said, and began shucking his own layers until he was down to his long johns and changing his socks yet again. "Hurry up, Ray," Fraser said again, sliding down into his sleeping bag with his hot water bottle and 4 or 5 pairs of damp socks. Ray followed suit. After about 3.5 minutes of shivering, his body curled up in a little knot around the hot insulated bottle, and he realized, at last, he was fine. It even felt kind of nice. Cozy. "In the morning," Fraser said, "do everything you can while still in your bag. It will help conserve body heat until we're underway again." Ray mumbled an acknowledgement, and Fraser covered the lantern. The low moon shone in through the tent's ceiling vent, and Ray watched his breath puff white in the darkness. He'd already been lectured on not soaking his sleeping bags with his own breath, so he just watched it puff and vanish, until he dropped off into sleep. The next day, Ray began to get into the rhythm. Before dawn, he woke to a soft rustling as Fraser wiggled around in his sleeping bag, pawing through his pack one-handed with the bag cinched around his shoulders to keep the warmth in. Then he pulled all the day's clothing into the bag with him and wriggled around some more, warming it up, Ray guessed. And then he wriggled yet some more while he stripped down to nothing and put on fresh layers. It was hysterical to watch, maybe one of the funniest things Ray had ever seen, but it was maybe the best way in the world to start the day. Barring coffee, of course. At least until Fraser caught him watching. "I thought you were still asleep, Ray." "Who, me?" Ray said, flashing teeth at him. Fraser made a noise that sounded like an actual harumph and said, "Well, in that case, I'll leave breakfast in your hands while I see to the dogs." Ray chuckled long and hard until he rolled up and touched his pack barehanded. "Holy Jesus!" he shouted, and crawled all the way down into his sleeping bag to find his glove liners and gather up some more of that good, warm heat. Outside, he could hear Fraser laughing and saying something smart to Deef, and he decided he'd better get a move on with his own inchworm act before Fraser got too far ahead. Over his morning coffee, which wasn't near sweet or strong enough, but still did the job, Ray watched the dogs chow down on their breakfast, inhaling their kibble just as soon as Fraser doled it out. Fraser had a real knack with the dogs, and Ray felt unexpectedly jealous of it. The dogs didn't know Fraser at all, except for Deef, but they still did everything Fraser told them to. It didn't make any sense to him, except for how maybe Fraser just had a thing with animals. He felt useless by comparison, so he had Fraser's tea and oatmeal all ready for him when he sat down. "Here," he said, handing the cup over. "Thank you kindly, Ray." Fraser breathed in the steam from the tea with a happy smile, and something eased in the back of Ray's mind. And hell, it was just boiling water, but it was something. Ray watched Fraser take a sip, watched the dogs start to play, and let his eyes move across the landscape in a long arc. It wasn't that early anymore, but the sky was turning violetish in the west, and the sun was still a bright orange ball in the east, and the snow was really white, and the mountains behind them were really dark, except where the rock showed through. The big trees were mostly dark and piney, except for the ones that were ice-encrusted and naked, but it was all really, really pretty. It wasn't like anything he'd ever seen before, especially not with them stopping every once in a while for Fraser to point out stuff like moose droppings and bunny runs and herd of caribou down in the valley below them. It was something else. "Are you all right, Ray?" Ray looked back at Fraser, surprised. Yeah, I'm good." "You seem a bit out of sorts this morning." "Nah, I'm good. I'm just looking around. This place is just, you know, once you stop getting blinded by all the snow and you make yourself forget that it's ball-freezing cold out here, it's a pretty amazing place to be." Fraser smiled at him again, all the way to his eyes. "I'm glad you're enjoying it." "I am," Ray answered. And he was. Ray took one last walk around the clean, white snow of their campsite and hopped into his nook in the back of the sled. He wriggled a little, making sure the rolls of bedding were seated right to keep him from breaking his tailbone on a hard dip. It was cozy like this, tooling around the Arctic just because they could. Sure, he was colder than he'd ever been in his life, but he was starting to get used to the freezing part and starting to pay attention to how friggin' beautiful everything was. Then he started paying attention to how much work Fraser was doing to keep them both alive, and everything changed. It wasn't hard. On the next morning, when Ray was making his one cup of coffee and Fraser was making the oatmeal mushy, Ray put on his glasses so he could see and said to Fraser, "Level with me." Fraser, being Fraser, said, "I'm sorry?" Ray looked at him hard and said, "I'm going to learn this stuff. You know how I feel about not pulling my own weight, so you're just going to have to teach me everything, okay? Dogs, tent, stove, what you did to that rabbit last night, all of it." Ray held up a hand when Fraser started to protest. "I don't want no arguments on this, Fraser. I just want to learn how." And Fraser, being Fraser, stared down at the oatmeal pot for an unnecessarily long period of time, and finally looked back to Ray, saying, "All right, then." And that's where they started. Right after breakfast that day, Fraser taught Ray to break camp while he loaded the sled. Before he knew it, Ray got better at camping than he ever thought he'd be in his whole life, and the freaky thing was, well, there were a lot of freaky things, but the really freaky thing was how much like police work it felt. Maybe that was partly because it was with Fraser, and any time they were doing something partners-like, well, that was usually police work. But when it came right down to it, it seemed to Ray that the two of them surviving in Fraser's inhospitably cold and treacherous environment wasn't that far off from them surviving any given moment in Chicago with pissed-off mob bosses and nerve gas dealers and drug dealers in their way. The camping thing was all about working together, just like always, and they were good at that. Fraser finished double-checking the dog's harnesses, clapped Ray's shoulder with a gloved and thick-mittened hand, and they were off. After a while, they would stop, and Fraser would show him something like 3 different kinds of snow, and Ray would work some more on learning how to ski. Ray wasn't so good on the skis. He knew this. Fraser knew this. Fraser still managed to make encouraging noises at him, which was probably some Canadian disease he had, something to go along with the excessive politeness. It was cool to be sliding over the snow, but then he'd get tired or the terrain would change, or he would get going too fast and he'd start to worry, and then his toes would angle wrong, and suddenly he'd be on the ground, face hot and feeling like an idiot. Then Fraser would have to stop the sled and untangle him and pat him down to make sure his knees and ankles were all still in working order. Well, not so that he had to, but it also didn't much bother Ray that Fraser cared so much, so he let him. And that almost made it okay. But it also still burned him that this was something Fraser was really, really good at. This wasn't something like detecting weird scents in dirt, either. This was something that any regular healthy guy ought to be able to do, and he sucked at it. It pissed him off, and getting angry at the skis didn't help much. What helped, though, was when Fraser taught him how to drive the sled. And that was a stroke of genius for which Ray remains so grateful that he did even more than his share of the work, until Fraser wised up and started beating him to it. Possibly it was a direct result of Fraser working with two so-called Vecchios who were both incredibly personally invested in their classic American automobiles. Something must have rubbed off on him, because one morning when they were loading up the sled, Fraser explained clearly and succinctly to Ray how the sled was just like the goat, if Ray happened to live out of a GTO instead of having a nice warm apartment to go back to at night. And Ray could get behind that. The sled was important. It had everything in it they needed to make it out here. And learning to drive it wasn't going to be like going out on one of those go-kart racing places in the burbs. Driving a sled was a big deal. But better than that, once he got down which words made the dogs do what, it was really, really fun. At least out in the open country. He let Fraser take it when things looked sketchy, but it was good. The looks Fraser would give him, the pats on the back, the occasional words of approval. Most of the time, though, it was just that shared single look. That bit of eye contact, and both their faces breaking into wide, happy grins. Like this was exactly where they were supposed to be. And then, if it was smooth, Ray would get the dogs to run a little faster, and his heart would pound, and the wind would rush in his face. And God, what a great feeling. The thing about him and Fraser was how fast and easy they'd fit right into each other's back pockets. Maybe that's why Ray knew going off into the wilderness with Fraser would be okay. After all, they went to the bathroom at work and stood next to each other with their dicks in their hands, breaking off in mid-conversation about whatever case they were working on to focus hard on the porcelain tile in front of their faces and carefully not check each other out while they were peeing, and then pick up the conversation a moment later right where they'd left off. They were just in tune, right from the start. Hell, even back before they'd caught Muldoon, when Fraser had come upon Ray writing his name in the snow with a stream of piss, he'd only shook his head and sniped a Diefenbaker while Ray stood there shaking his dick off and laughing. But none of that stuff prepared Ray for the morning of the second day with Fraser telling him he had to wipe his ass with snow. Fraser started a lecture with something about the environment because, geez, the guy could go on and on and on about Frobisher's eccentricities and the frigging environment already, and finally Ray just shouted, "Stop!" and stared at Fraser until he did. "You're saying we have no toilet paper or Kleenex or nothing?" Fraser let out a belabored sigh and said, "Yes, Ray, that is what I've been trying to tell you. Apparently Sergeant Frobisher is quite the traditionalist when it comes to these things. Or possibly he objects to the burning of used toilet paper for environmental reasons. I'm not certain." Ray made a face and said, "That's disgusting, Fraser." Fraser made his own face, an exasperated face, and answered back as if quoting out of a regulations manual. "Go downwind, dig a shallow hole, do your business, make a snowball to clean up with, cover the hole, and return to camp or the sled or wherever you're supposed to be." Fraser paused for breath and gave him a sharp look. "When we camp, Ray, please make sure we're both apprised of which is our toilet area and which is our freshwater gathering area. Also, I believe you'll find a bottle of hand sanitizer in your pack if you need it." It took a minute for Ray to find the words. A long minute, in which he folded his arms tight across his chest and paced back and forth long enough to pack down a shallow trench in the snow under his feet. "I can't believe you expect me to do that," he complained. "As if it's not cold enough already. It has to be gross, too. Sanitation is very important. As I told you before, Ray, cleansing certain areas of the body daily is essential." "Oh, believe me, I know. My beard itches like you wouldn't believe, and I cannot wait to have a shower again, because scrubbing down with a rag and a bar of soap is not my idea of getting clean. And don't you even start again with the thing about snow baths." "I realize it's uncomfortable." Fraser scratched his own patchy stubble, a resigned look in his eyes. "And I don't disagree with your feelings on the matter, Ray, but I'm afraid there's nothing to be done but make the best of it." And there wasn't any answer to that, which didn't stop Ray from stewing over it over the course of the day. But then there were so many other things to do and pay attention to and think about that it wasn't long before it had slipped Ray's mind. And that's how he arrived at some freakish new variety of normal that included letting his beard grow in and scrubbing his ass with a big, hard-packed clump of snow. But it worked, and even though at first he had some anxiety about getting frostbite on his nether bits, it turned out that up against the body's central heat core, or whatever it was that Fraser called it down there, it wasn't really that bad. Invigorating, even. Kind of. Ray was trying not to obsess over what he was going to do next, But sitting in the sled for hours on end, his thoughts kept returning to how everything he was before he met Fraser was gone. That's what decompression was for. He knew that. They had a formula for how many weeks decompression time you got per week's undercover, and with 2 years under his belt, he had a while before it became an issue. What he worried about, though, was what the hell Ray Kowalski was going to do in Chicago when it was time for him to go back. They didn't talk about it, but from time to time, Fraser would catch him brooding. Then, a few minutes later, he'd do something like appear at Ray's elbow with his field glasses and his finger over his lips, and then he'd point to a funny dark blur against all the white. So Ray would take the glasses and look at a group of shaggy brown things, sort of a cross between those weird furry ottomans they had back in the 70s, and hay bales, with horns. Not knowing if it was dangerous to talk, Ray gave Fraser his what-the-fuck expression and waited. Fraser beamed back at him and whispered, "Musk oxen, Ray, you'll notice that the herd is protecting two young calves in the center." And Ray got it. He did. This was the kind of shit that made Fraser's weak. It was like back in the old days when he and Stella would go out dancing and be the hottest thing out there. Or maybe more like when he was back at the 1-9 and he got the collar on that... Well, no, that wasn't the same thing at all. It was closer to when he and his dad rebuilt the goat's engine, and how it felt the first time they turned that baby over, all fresh and throaty and perfect. Perfect like the herd of shaggy ottomans and their little babies, who never did a bad thing to nobody else in their whole lives. Like Fraser. And Ray smiled back at Fraser after that, taking a long look through the glasses again. When he handed them back, he held eye contact for, well, longer than he probably should have. On the other hand, Fraser didn't seem to mind, and it wasn't like Ray was still pretending to be Vecchio anymore. So he gave Fraser a smile that he used to reserve for Stella, and let his eyes linger, thinking that if Fraser freaked, he'd just pretend it was nothing, and things would be okay. Fraser's hand slipped out of its mitten and came up slow, and Ray thought, "Ha! Eye rub!" But then it snaked out and around the back of Ray's neck. Ray gasped. He told himself it was because Fraser's gloved thumb felt so gloriously warm against his skin. And then Fraser's other hand was pressing against Ray's chest, fiddling with cloth, adjusting Ray's coat and scarf, and Fraser did it all with the weirdest expression on his face, and didn't shy away from Ray looking. "Don't catch cold, Ray," Fraser said, tugging down on Ray's hat with that glint still in his eyes. And as Fraser stepped away, all Ray could do was stare and eventually mumble, thanks, as he followed him back to the sled. Fraser had been so warm, and Ray couldn't begin to remember why he was thinking about ottomans. They'd developed a routine to setting up camp. Ray had learned how to make the tent happen, but Fraser was unbelievably fast with the snow shovel, and could get the pit and the entire entrance hole dug out and packed down in less than no time. It was an amazing thing to watch. Ray had seen plenty of the naked David statue guy Fraser had carved Franny for Christmas, since she'd kept it out on her desk until Welsh finally made her take it home, but it was incredible what Fraser could do with cutting implements and a time constraint. That left Ray with setting up the stove, gathering snow, and settling the dogs while water melted for dinner. Ray was good with that arrangement most of the time. He could heat stew. It wasn't anything fancy like he used to do in the old days when he had more than himself to cook for, and from time to time he wondered what it would be like, especially when Fraser decided to teach him how to kill and clean snowshoe hair. It was slowly growing on him, although he would kill for a good marinade. The fish, though, he was all over the ice fishing. Something besides stewed carrots and potatoes would have been good to go with it, but it was fine. It was fresh fish, and it was tasty. Fraser, being Fraser, noticed how much Ray had liked the fish, and the next morning mentioned that they might adjust their course to a slightly more southerly heading so as to meet up with a certain unpronounceable tributary of some river not too far away. That was all. No mention of fishing or nothing, just a change in direction, and they were on their way. And the fishing was excellent. They got to the sea and saw a polar bear, which pretty much freaked Ray right out. It wasn't up close or anything. It was out on an ice floe, and the ice floe was not actually that close to them, but it was a polar bear, a real, live polar bear, and it was enormous, even from way the hell away. Luckily, it was going in the other direction. Still, Ray felt the need to point out, "Fraser, that was a polar bear." "Yes, Ray." "See, I watch television. I stop on the Discovery Channel sometimes, and PBS too, and that was a polar bear." "Yes, Ray." "So what are you going to do about it?" Fraser turned then and frowned at him. "What do you mean?" "Well, there are people out here. Shouldn't it be in a designated polar bear area or something?" "Actually, Ray, no." "No?" "No." "Oh, Ray said, deflating. Fraser shot him a bland look. It isn't a perpetrator, you know. Ray chewed that one over for a minute, because sure, not a perp, but still, polar bear! On the other hand, the bears were sort of built for this place. They did fine out on the ice, just as they were. Especially on the ice, going in the other direction. Ray watched it fade into the distance and said, Yeah, okay, you're right. Like it's just out for a stroll or something, doing polar bear things on the ice blow thingy, and going far, far away from us now. Fraser smiled, eyes twinkling. Yes, Ray. Fraser? Ray said later. Hmm? Why haven't we been eaten by bears already, or wolves or mountain lions or lemmings or whatever? Fraser laughed. I don't think you need to fear the lemmings, Ray. Damn it, Fraser, you know what I mean. Sorry, yes, Fraser said. Well, at first I should say that we are nowhere near mountain lion territory. However, it's largely a simple matter of not antagonizing the predators. Generally, the other animals at the top of the food chain prefer to avoid conflict with humans. Obviously, you and I are not hunting large game, and since they can hear us or smell us coming, they simply get out of our way. What about at night? Ray, Fraser said earnestly, and he must have heard the tremble in Ray's voice, or he wouldn't have bothered clapping Ray on the shoulder with his huge, mitten-encased hand. Diefenbaker would never allow anything to happen, to us or the dogs. Ray stood there staring into Fraser's eyes, and today they were a blue somewhere close to the color of the Arctic seawater, and had a steadiness in them that shut the screaming little kid inside Ray's head right up. Because, yeah, they had Dief, and all kinds of crazy explorer guys had been tramping across the northwest areas for centuries. And Inuit people for eons before that, right? So they'd be fine. Fine. So when they stopped for lunch, Ray snuck Diefenbaker a chunk of rabbit meat from his stew and promised him a box of donuts if they ever found themselves near a bakery. Sledding over the frozen gulf to King William Island did not seem like they were going over the sea to a whole separate island. Ray had to force himself not to think about the killer whales and things just a few feet below them. It was creepy, especially when Fraser got out on the ice saw and made a hole to catch them some char. Ray looked down the hole and got vertigo so bad that he had to sit down fast before he fell. Not that Fraser would let him fall in. Hole wasn't that big. But geez, killer whales and polar bears, and all they had were their sidearms and the shotgun Frobisher had given them with the sled. Not that a shotgun would stop a killer whale anyhow. After they crossed the sea ice, they went to find the monuments marking the Franklin Expedition archaeological sites. It was all forested and pretty, even if it was a lot of walking on snowshoes. Ray had to make Fraser stop telling him about the cannibalism. Then he said, Okay, explain me this. How come these guys are supposed to be these great explorers, but they still starved to death or went nutso from the lead in their food? Then he had to make Fraser stop telling him another Inuit story because he was missing the point by miles. I don't get it, he said impatiently. Those rabbit stairs you showed me aren't rocket science. If I could do them, why couldn't they? That's the heart of the mystery, I suppose, Fraser answered with a thoughtful look. Ray read all the historical markers about the Queen's expeditions and the dead English guys, and by the last one, Ray looked over at Fraser with a big, stupid grin on his face and let loose with the belly laugh he'd been holding back for nearly half an hour. Ray? Fraser said, finally drawing close and not subtly checking his eyes and skin for indications of hypothermia. You know what I think, Fraze? Ray said in as serious a tone as he could muster. Fraser kept frowning. I'm afraid I don't. I think bears ate him. Ray made a half-turn, gesturing to the stone monuments around them. I think Franklin got eaten by bears, or at least his corpse did, and he's been all digested and done with for about 150 years now. Ray paused and looked back at Fraser with a huge grin, unless it was the lemmings. Fraser's mouth opened and closed on air, and then he was smirking at Ray, and he looked like he was going to burst from the effort of holding back the laughter. See, you agree with me, Ray crowed. I knew it. His hand isn't reaching out to anything, because it's done been eaten. Fraser was fully in the grip of his giggles by then, and it was a long time before he could gasp out, I dare say you're right, Ray. He was holding tight to Ray's shoulder, laughing so hard he was almost falling off his snowshoes, which Ray did, tripping Fraser, and then they were a freakish, laughing heap in the snow. So what do you want to do now? Ray asked when they finally made their way back to the sled. Fraser stopped and shielded his eyes as he gazed out over the white expanse below them. Well, he began, there's almost limitless possibility, at least given the scope of what we can reach within our available means. By which I mean to say, he said, I believe it's your choice. Yeah? Yeah. You're sure? I am. Because, well, I mean, our leave's not up yet, so we should go somewhere else. West, maybe? How's West sound? Good, Fraser said with an odd, almost tender look in his eyes. West sounds good, Ray. They made camp again, and the next morning headed back over the gulf to the mainland with a new sort of freedom. It was hard to get used to not having a concrete goal anymore. Not that chasing after some dead guy's hand counted as a concrete goal, as such. It was the principle of doing something wild, like dating a supermodel, because wouldn't that be a trip? But now they didn't have any real goal except to get off the island, since it was prime polar bear real estate. Seeing just one had been more than enough, at least without one of those protective habit trail things they had at the zoo between them. Even more than that, though, the fact was they'd been out on the tundra for 4 weeks by then. It was still almost shockingly pretty, and seeing Fraser happy was worth damn near any price in the world, but Ray was nearing the point where he'd give a whole hell of a lot for a few nights with a real roof over his head, not to mention a good hot shower. They headed back to the west, bypassing a couple of closer spots on the map, because Fraser knew a place they could get a hotel, and that sounded like a dream come true, and he said so. "I dare say it won't be much, Ray," Fraser warned. Ray laughed. "Fraser, how weird is it that this map has cities marked on it, and then out next to the grid mark it says population 20? 20 people does not make a city. Kogluktok is a bit larger than that, yes." Ray opened his map book and looked it up. 1,200. "Well, how about that?" "It does fluctuate somewhat with the season, of course." "Of course," Ray said, mocking him, and Fraser shot him a tense glance. Ray relented, saying, "Hey, I just want to remember what it's like not to sleep on snow for a night or two, that's all." Fraser nodded once more and said, "Understood." Late that afternoon, after Ray had cleaned and spitted a pair of snowshoe hairs with only slight direction from Fraser, he sat by the fire and watched the hazy pale sun slide down the sky. He had tea on the stove and passed a mug to Fraser when he got back from dog duty. "I just realized something," Ray said.
"Oh?"
"I haven't thought about Franny or Welsh or my parents for weeks. I haven't even thought about Stella."
"Ah," Fraser said.
"Feels good.
I'm glad."
"How much more leave do you have left?" Ray asked as if he'd forgotten, even though he hadn't.
7.5 weeks, before encroaching on sick time.
Ray nodded and said, "Good." Fraser frowned at him slightly, but Ray had to turn the bunnies again so they would cook evenly and didn't scorch. He really wished they had a marinade. "So, 2 days to Kogluktok?"
"If the weather holds, yes," Fraser said.
Ray poured his own cup of tea and watched the western sky.